Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1048. If you go to wizardguitar.com, that will take you to the tour page for my stand-up tour for the Wizard Guitar Tour 2020, coming to the Punchline in San Francisco, Feb 27 through 29, Punchline in Sacramento, March 5 through 7, the Brea Improv, March 21st, then Helium in Portland, then the Wilbur in Boston, then Comedy Works in Denver, Minneapolis after that, a bunch of others. Again, wizardguitar.com. Come on out, for crap's sake. But let's talk about you, the ID10T community. Like Albie, who writes, after being depressed over not having a career path and no creative outlet, I finally realized that I could just hope for change to happen to me. So I've written a horror book called Noisy River, which takes place in a fictionalized version of the town I grew up in New Mexico. I also started to aggressively pursue a career in voiceover. I'm now a little more than a year in. I've worked in animation, video games, and films. It's been tough, but this is the happiest I've been in a long time. Thank you, Albie. Thank you for sharing that. Albie's website is albierobles.voice.com, which is A-L-B-I-E-R-O-B-L-E-S voice.com. And the book is available on Amazon by searching Noisy River. Well done. This podcast is, dare I say, an extra special episode? It's extra, extra special because it's, first of all, so Drew Scott, who's been on before, Drew and Jonathan, of course, the Property Brothers, who I think are most of HGTV at this point, but with, you know, Property Brothers and Brother vs. Brother and Forever Home. They also have furniture and a cool, they make mattresses and a cool magazine. Like they do, they're a friggin' industry and like two of the nicest guys. And so it may not surprise you, or it probably won't, because if you probably already know this, but Drew's wife, Linda, is also so nice and super rad. And so Drew and Linda started a podcast called At Home with Linda and Drew Scott. And I did it, I think it came out like a month ago. But at the time, Lydia was not able to attend. I think she was working. So I said, hey, maybe it'd be cool if you came on this episode with Drew and Linda. And she was like, sure. So Lydia is on this episode. So it's me and my wife Lydia and Drew and Linda just being couples AF. I mean, talking renovation and restoration and couplehood and relationships. It was, I mean, just, it was a dream podcast because it really was just the four of us like hanging out and it just so happened to be recorded. I mean, I got to talk Lydia into doing more of these because she's the best. It was really, really, really special. So if you get a chance after this podcast, go wherever it is that you enjoy getting your podcasts and listen to At Home with Linda and Drew Scott right after the ID10T podcast number 1048 with Drew and Linda Scott and Lydia Hurst - Hardwick.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
This is a little smaller than your podcast room.
This is great. I love it.
It's a similar...
I love that you're joining us.
I don't usually do...
Well, that's... Yeah,
Lydia. These are so... podcasts. I feel like people try to get to know me, and I hide.
Well, we did a podcast together. Lydia and I did a podcast together. Our friend Michael Rosenbaum and Chris Sullivan did one.
Yeah.
A couples podcast, and we did that one. But I think, have you ever popped on the, you popped up on the Kenda podcast like years ago.
I chime in now and again.
I need to get your bag out there. Do you want?
Sure.
You can't, no, I just need to get her bag.
Sorry. So you popped in on that one? On
the well, it's more like I sit in and I silently observe. I try, and then Chris will sometimes try to bring me in, and I just make gestures and nod.
Well, we wanted you to come on ours, like, yeah. But I think you were away, or you were had an, was it audition or something? There was something
I was
that
doing
you,
something, yeah. I can't remember.
But I can't remember either, but it was, but you were, there was a reason you couldn't do it. And so when we booked you for this one, I was like, well, Lydia has to be here for this. So we can, you know, like do some couples renovation talk.
Yes.
Is that another word for therapy?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, as I said, because Leanne and Steve Ford were on, and we were talking about...
I listened to that one.
The sort of secondary show to Thanks. Watch when you're watching any of the, like, House Hunters or any of... Or any of the Property Brothers shows is, it's the, is this couple going to make it game?
Mm-hmm.
Based on, like... How not just how similar their tastes are, but how they sort of deal with each other. You sort of look for the microaggressions, and you look for the, you know, and Lydia and I will go, oh yeah, there's a couple.
They're not going to last. No. Give them a year.
Yeah. You should have a running, like, a board, because there are couples that don't make it past.
Oh, I'm sure.
Like any other couple.
Well, we had one, I can't remember if I told you this, but we had this one couple where the husband and wife, their communication was terrible, and she... Sadly, she was like a tyrant. And so, you know, he was doing anything. Like she was the dominant one in the relationship there. And at one point, John was talking with the husband about doing this, opening up this one wall. John was talking to the wife and said, you know, should we check with your husband about opening up this wall? And she's like, he'll do what I tell him to do.
Whoa!
You're like, oh, that's a little aggressive.
And you also have to imagine that when people are on TV, they're putting their best foot forward.
I know, that's
well,
so sad.
We try to edit. We literally try to edit to make everyone look great. We're not trying to make people look bad.
No, of course not. It's not a dramatic...
No, but at the end of the day, we say to people, if, you know, you're nervous about being on camera or whatever, we're like, if you are an asshole, you'll look like an asshole.
We can't edit the asshole out.
No. Well, but that's the interesting thing was that when reality television, when like docuseries first started, you know, after that first season of The Real World and like whatever it was, 90 or 91 or whatever, and then my ex-girlfriend Jacinda was on season 4, the London Real World, and when all the Real World kids, they all had this similar experience where they'd watch the shows when they got edited together and they'd all be like, what the fuck? Because...
Well, they were trying to make them look bad.
Well, right? No, it's like not that they were trying drama. To make them look bad. They were trying to create drama. So they would shoot... If my understanding was correct, what they would do is, you know, they shot all the time. So there were cameras in the house, they would follow them everywhere. And then, as opposed to a scripted show where they write the scripts and then you shoot it, they would shoot everything first and then sort of figure out, like, well, what characters?
What tensions are there?
And so they sort of build characters and, like, kind of edit stuff together in ways where, you know, Jacinda would say, like, yeah, they would take, like, the beginning of one thing, tack it to the end of something else and put them together... like this, the sentences were said months apart, and they were neither of them were about the thing that they were applied to. To
they
sort
were
of
probably wearing the same outfit.
No, well, and then they would say to them like, "Hey, this isn't exactly." Yes, we said these things, but this isn't exactly how it played out. And then the producers would say, like, oh, it's not that it's real. It's just a real-life-based soap opera. Wow. And so I think what sort of happened was they would sort of create these heightened characters based on editing choices. And then people who wanted to be on the shows would then go, oh, I need to perform a crate. Yeah. So you're getting like performance on top of performance on top of editing and performance. Ooh. And so I think that's why it seems like there's this curve where people kind of get nuttier and nuttier as seasons progress because they're going, oh, in order to get attention, I need to be this heightened version. So maybe, yeah, I don't know.
It's like outdoing the drama. So what we're saying is that reality TV is like the start of fake news.
Oh my God, it's
just like edited together.
I mean, it is based on real things, you know, the docuseries, but it is, but you know, it's still entertainment and things still tend to be heightened. But I had so much fun doing your podcast. And so I just thought, like, oh, Lids has got to sit in on this because there's so much that we covered. And I feel like more than half of what I was talking about, it's like, oh, well, Lydia likes to do this. And she's the wallpaper person. And she's, like, the fabric guru.
Yeah.
It just sort of seemed like, oh, you should be here to talk about this stuff.
Yeah. So I just want to see if either Linda or Lydia, the L's, get any word in edgewise, because you and I will get on a tangent of something and just keep going. And then I realize, oh, I just spoke
and
for like 15 minutes straight.
I mean, what might actually happen is like what happens at a dinner where you and I have a conversation and they have a separate conversation.
Most confusing podcast ever. Like,
we can put our conversation in people's left ear and their conversation in people's
right. And then at the ding, we go diagonally.
I will say, I feel like with the house stuff, and please don't take this the wrong way, I feel like we have it easier because, like, Chris pops in and out, and, like, he'll do the videos, like, so we're doing this, and it's really fun, but, like, I have to live in it.
Yeah.
And be there all the time.
But let me, I can't get mad at that
considering that is
and be the GC.
Like, yes, I'm basically the general contractor, and, you know, lately I've been the landscaper working machetes and
so this is why I want to ask you, because you were sort of like venting a little bit to Linda and me the other day about that, and but then you take on all these tasks, and I'm like, great, so you got started on things and then you handed it off to your trades that you hire and pay to do this work, right? And
well,
then you're like, well, no, I started, so I finished
to do,
it.
But like someone sometimes will come in and, you know, I hate to say it, but like it is frustrating if you're a woman trying to do these things, because a lot of men and like landscaping and construction, and I guess I look young, so they don't take me seriously, mm-hmm.
right.
and they think I don't know what I'm talking about.
So where's your dad? Bring your dad
basically,
out here.
Basically, yeah. So then I just have to pick up a machete or pick up the furniture.
And so she does
it myself.
So like Lydia
well, not attack them, but maybe attack the garden.
Lydia, don't mistake the fact that she's incredibly sweet to suggest that she is a shrinking violet by any means. Like. She will – so we are renovating – like we're restoring a place right now. We just started a new project and there was all this overgrowth. And so she talked to the gardener and she was like, okay, so I want to remove all of this, and we have like a 4-week timeline. And the guy's like
– he looked like a deer in headlights.
He was like,
he was
oh,
like, I, well,
we can't do that.
No, 4 weeks, that's not enough time.
So
if you tell me – that you are unable to do something, I take that as a challenge.
So the next day,
where
she...
I'm like, if you say you can't do something and you're a grown ass man,
and this
and
is your job,
if I can get my 103 pound self out there and do it, then you're, you know
so,
what? No.
So I saw, and you went out and did it all yourself.
It looks great out there.
Literally, within the first day, she had cut down like a quarter of it. Got a dude from TaskRabbit and was like, okay, let's clear all this out. And the gardener came back and he was like, holy shit. Like one of the other gardeners called him and was like, you need to get over here now because she's chopping shit down.
Yeah, like I think he pooped his pants a little.
And so they got it done in 2 weeks.
See, now this is what I find very frustrating. We've dealt with renovations since midnight. We've been doing what we do for a long time. We've seen it all. We know typically what our timelines will work. We work with some great crews, but every now and then we'll have trades that will come in and say, oh, this one project, like demoing this wall. They're like, that wall there, and it's not load-bearing. They'll be like, that'll take us – we need a full crew, full guys. It'll take us, you know, 4 solid days. It's going to be about $20,000. I'm like, to remove that wall, $20,000? And all they're doing is they're trying to upcharge us. We call it the property brother charge.
Sure.
So people will start by trying to upcharge us, and then after that – they realize that we know what we're talking about and what we're doing. We're not going to pay more than what it's worth, or we just get in there. So there's this one guy that said that to Jonathan and me. We're like, this is not a 4-day project with multiple guys. You can do this in no time. Jonathan and I literally went in there and we demoed that wall in 10 minutes. And we removed all of the brick and everything.
Yep.
In another 10 minutes, it was done. I'm like, you're fired.
That's essentially what's wound up happening at our house. But I always get the Hearst family discount.
I've heard about that.
Which is the 30% upcharge.
Yeah.
It's a 30% upcharge.
So frustrating.
But it is – but, you know, like, that's the thing is that – Lydia is this perfect combination of like really sweet, really easy to get along with, but I personally would not fuck with her. Like,
well, it's
I just,
really funny because people.
She has a machete. Why would you?
She knows. She, like when I came home one day a couple years ago and she was machete training in the driveway, like machete fighting, I was like,
machete training?
Okay,
it's really fun.
Yeah.
It's literally what it sounds like. You're battling someone with real machetes.
So you weren't just prepping for the gardening?
No.
This is my question for you regarding the gardening. Machetes aside, so my older brother has this issue where he could get someone to come in and do something, but he likes to do it all and he takes it all on his own. He loves to do it. I don't. I like to get things done quicker when they're actually doing the work.
Right.
Do you add things to your plate that you could? Do you micromanage or do you offload?
I would love to offload. But I think, you know, for better or worse, I have a very artistic brain. So I will see things perhaps in a different way where, you know, if you guys, this is a weird comparison, but if you watch like Homicide Hunter and the Joe Kenda person walks into the scene and then suddenly the whole scene like disappears and it's he's playing it out in
his head.
Shout
out to Carl Marino who plays young Joe Kenda.
But like that's sort of how I see the world in everyday life. So it's like I can step into a room and everything can dissolve and I can see the placement and see the settings and see how it all like maps out and plays out. Trying to describe that to someone who doesn't understand how my brain works, it's very hard. So I unfortunately have to kind of be like, no, this is how I micromanage. I mean, I don't mean to bring Kaylin in, but Kaylin and I have
Kaylin's
done many photo shoots together.
He's a great photographer. He shoots pictures for the podcast.
He's amazing. But Kaylin has firsthand experience of learning how my brain operates when I'm like, let's do a shoot. We're going to do this
thing. Look at that knowing head. Kaylin's like, yeah.
Like, we're going to do this thing, and it's going to be great. And like, and I'm describing all these things, but not actually saying anything at all. And in my mind, it makes perfect sense.
But do you start the explanation, describe, what was that murder show? Homicide Hunter.
Yeah,
so do you start talking about Homicide Hunter, and
this
then you pull your machete, and then you try to explain it to him? Because I think 99% of people would be afraid.
So it's kind of like this murder show that I love? Okay, all right.
You come into this dark house with me, and
one of us emerges, a victor.
But that's really cool. Your brain is basically like the 3D rendering that you see in these design shows.
Out in a specific way. And that was part of the problem with the first rug man when I started messaging you before, where I was trying to explain how to properly install a rug, which he should have known since that was his job. But he, like, didn't want to do it. And as I was trying to say, well, you have to cut the border, and it has to follow the path, and it has to go along this route, and there's the steps and the platform, and the wall, like, comes out, so it has to be measured this specific way. And then he just got mad and was like, well, you just don't know what you want. And I was like,
I just told you exactly what I wanted.
The problem is that I do know what I want, but you don't want to do it. And so it's just, it's a very,
that's so
I mean, I might be a little either like ADD or OCD or both.
But,
I don't know.
But anybody who's in a customer service industry, anybody who has to deal with clients, you need to be good at what you do.
Right.
And then you have to be realistic with what's out of your capability. If that first guy doesn't know how to do what you're asking for, then he's not the right guy for the job. But if the client wants something very specific, the client deserves to have that very specific thing.
And I got to say, like, almost 100% of the time, she's right. Like, when she's kind of describing stuff, how something should go. Because even at first, when we would do renovation stuff together, even I would be like, well, I don't know. Are you sure about this? And then it would get done the way she wanted. I'd be like, oh, fuck, you're right. Like, I don't know what it is about the way her brain works, but she does
it differently.
But she does, like, even though she says, like, well, I would love to offload the work, I know that when it came time to do the gardening stuff that she couldn't do, which was, like pull out the roots of these, like, really big birds of paradise that were kind of junking up the yard, she was bummed.
The birds of paradise, but I couldn't rip the roots
out. She was bummed, like, oh, no, I guess I can't do this anymore. I was really having fun swinging the machete, and now,
introduce her to a bobcat.
Well, yeah. We're going to have to bring in a bobcat to break up some concrete. But what I've noticed is that with anyone who is going through a renovation, you really have to be comfortable with a higher than what you would expect percentage of things just going wrong. Or what we found when, you know, we were doing other renovations is that, because we don't want to sound like, it's not that Lydia's like a jerk to micromanage people, but a lot of times if you just kind of, our experience has been, this is just historical data, if you kind of leave crews to their own devices, they'll just do stuff and you're like, why did you tile that? Like,
or
they just do stuff.
Why is it upside down?
Yeah, why did no one ask anything? And so you do have to, like, and then you have to pay to rip it out and put it back in. And there is a certain amount of micromanaging. And if you're a contractor, if you're a subcontractor, I'm not trying to come down you for this.
No.
But it is a thing that happens very consistently. Or people just don't show up. And you're like, how do you run a business if you just don't show up?
Oh, my God. Well, you think about it, with our shows, what we do. So we had, for example, just before Christmas, we had 39 renovations on the go for the shows.
Yeah.
All at one time, 39 renovations.
That's so wild.
And with that many, we have different construction crews. We have different trades working with us. If one person doesn't do what they're supposed to do when they're supposed to do it, it can throw off the whole chain.
Yes.
And so it really is a frustration that I know very, very well. It's very, very frustrating.
Because everything has sort of a fulcrum point where it's like, okay, so we can't redo the windows until we redo the walls, but we can't redo the walls until we do the floor tile. We can't do this. Yeah, we have to do this. And so if, like, the tile guy doesn't show up and he's the first stage, then it's time and money, because it's that domino effect of just like, now nothing can happen, and now if you're a week behind, then everyone, some other guy might be another week behind, and all of a sudden you've just tacked on an additional month, you know, so.
And especially, too, on Property Brothers Forever Home, like, we can't, our homeowners, they pay for the renovation. A lot of people think it's a free reno. It's not. We stretch a budget like no one can, but it's still their budget. So if we start, you know, misaligning our schedule and missing certain permits and then have to double up on costs, it all comes out of the homeowner's pocket, and we don't want that. So,
sure.
Right.
Yeah, it's a... But, you know, you find some good trades. Did my rug guy work out for you?
His schedule didn't work out, but I managed to find my mom's old family friend.
Good. So all right, so you got it done.
He's been doing the stuff, yes.
Nice. Good.
Yeah, job. Yeah, we had to carpet because we have, like, wood stairs, and we had to put runners down the stairs.
They saw the video.
But
it was great. I'm a very detail-oriented person. Linda loves to see the detail as well. And so for me, to see everything that was in your head with what you sent over is perfect.
Right.
I think some people might, if somebody just likes to kind of get in and do some quick job, it would overwhelm them, and they're not the right person for that kind of detail.
Well, so it'd be interesting to talk about couple dynamics and renovation, too, because, you know, like, we survived, our relationship survived a major renovation in the months leading up to our wedding.
Yeah.
Same for us. That we were living in the house.
Yeah, so like, we were, like, moving room to room. We started in the basement.
Yeah.
And then, like...
Because that had the working bathroom.
Yeah.
And that was the part that they weren't, you know, so we would just sort of move around while a wedding was being planned. And mm-hmm. I have to say, I think we got through it pretty well, but... I also...
There were some tense moments, but we survived it.
So we just recently had a really stupid argument that I was totally my fault, which was
I don't even remember what it was. So
it was this. It was that this house that we're redoing, Lydia started doing a bunch of stuff. And I was like, you didn't... Like, shouldn't we... shouldn't we collaborate on this? Because she, like, when she gets an idea in her head, she just runs and just starts doing it because she just wants to get it done.
Yes, this is true. But I will – one conversation is enough for me.
Yeah.
And then it's like, go time.
Yeah.
She doesn't wait. Talk about
She just gets shit done because she wants to get it done.
But Chris does like to have multiple conversations about things.
This is true.
So, like, we'll have a conversation about something – and I think it's done, but then, like, 2 months later, he'll be like, so wait, I just wanted to go over the paint color. And I'm like, I don't, what are you talking about? I thought that was done 2 months ago.
So what's your, and by the way, it was totally, I was just, I don't know, I was in a weird mood, and I think I was just being butthurt that day. I was like, you're just doing these things, and you're not involving me. I want to be involved. And she's like, I'm not doing this for me. I'm doing this for us to get this shit done. And I was like, that's... Oh, God
can't
damn.
Be mad at you.
Yeah.
And so, like, what is your dynamic when you guys are getting things done? And how do you... Because this is just good advice for any couple going through renovation. Can be very stressful for people, mm-hmm. especially if they're living through it. So what is your, like... Do you have an agreement? Is it unspoken? Do you handle different things? How do you communicate during a reno when it's your own home?
Yeah, I think it's best to admit our own expertise and like admit like what you're good at and what I'm good at. Like, I will never try to know about like construction stuff. But when it comes to design, I think we're lucky in that we're almost on the same page. And I find that I sometimes push your boundaries a little.
Yeah,
which is fun.
With our house here in Hancock Park as well, it was the same thing. There were certain areas where Linda brought in some amazing ideas, and I was nervous because we had never designed together before. But the funny thing, Lydia is basically Linda and me combined. Because Linda is this creative genius. Like, there's so many amazing ideas that she brings to the table, mm-hmm. but she will then go on forever. Linda will continue to think about it. And
that's where I'm more like Chris.
Top Linda.
And then I'll come in and I'll be like, all right, the conversation's been had. We'll get this thing done.
Yeah.
And so I really am the implementer and she's the idea machine. But I find together, though, I mean, in this room, we're all creative people in different ways, but I think Linda and I balance each other out perfectly because I'm very analytical. I'm also very creative, but I like to come up with those ideas, work it through, and then I'll take the lead and get it done.
Yeah, I mean, I really like to percolate on things to make sure that I still feel that way, because I know, like, in a moment you might go, yeah, let's do this, and then you sit on it for a while and you go, oh, I've actually changed my mind.
Yep.
And so, but Lydia, and I think she's right, just like once we kind of say something, she just gets it done, because then otherwise things just don't get done, you know? Like, that's how... That's how things just sit around, and then you end up with, like, something that's unfinished in your house that you always have to justify to your friends. Well, we're working on this, you know, where she just wants to get the shit done.
And I'm 100%. I can't stand an idea. You know, there's so many great ideas that come your way, but you can't act on absolutely everything. But I hate having something that's partway done. Mm-hmm. Or a physical renovation in the house. I cannot stand having trades coming into the house all the time. And Linda doesn't like that either, but... If it started, we're getting it done right away so we can enjoy it. And homeowners are the same. We work with homeowners on the show, and they've waited like a decade. They're like, we've always wanted to renovate our kitchen, but, you know, we thought we'd wait a while, and then just before we sell the house, maybe we'll do that. I'm like, why?
Why not make it?
Yeah, exactly. You don't get to enjoy it at all. Get it done now. Customize it how you want. And who knows? In 10, 20 years, if you decide you want to renovate it a different way, well, then you'll enjoy it at that point.
Yeah. Right.
It's the same reason I can't ever get a tattoo. Like, I could not make up my mind.
Oh my God, that's the same for me.
I don't know what I love enough other than the people in my lives, but I can't tattoo everyone's names on me.
And so, like, you have that fear of, like, oh, you'd get the tattoo, and afterwards you'd be like, fuck! Yeah, why this one?
Yeah, and then I'll look at ways to, like, okay, can you change that shape into something else?
Well, what I do, though, with the dolphin on my lower back, I tweak it a little bit. I'll add a little smile on it, one here, and then another fin.
Yeah, that's really nice. I'm just picturing that now. Yeah. I think that's someone should, you should Photoshop that. We should Photoshop that and put it up for the podcast, like Drew's dolphin
you know
stamp.
We did years ago. I cracked a joke. I think I actually said a dolphin tattoo on my lower back on Property Brothers, like, just in a scene, just as a haha moment. And the biggest thing we had on social media that fans were asking about was to see my tattoo. They all thought it was real.
I'm like, no.
I don't really have that.
Maybe it is.
But
the nipple ring, that's a whole other thing.
Maybe the dolphin's jumping through the nipple ring.
The hoop, yes.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. But as I said, I always defer to Lydia, and not because she's ever said, like, you know, ask my permission before you do stuff, but I just trust her, and I feel better because, again, I feel like she's usually right with stuff. Yeah. And so if I say, like, well, I'm thinking about doing this at this one place, she's really good at going, no, that would be weird because it's not this or this. And like I told you on your podcast, she was also the person that taught me when you're putting... When you're doing the interior on your house, I would say, like, well, this house is Spanish, so we should only have this type of furniture. She said, no, you need to find what speaks to you, and then it'll all speak to each other because you're the connection point. Don't try to fit it to the, you know, like, obviously we're not going to put in a super modern thing in an old Spanish house, but with furniture, it's like, you know, we have some, you know, Georgian type furniture, we have some Victorian type furniture, we have some Spanish colonials type.
It can be eclectic. Yeah.
Well, but, like, but art the too, all... though, because I know, like, you were like, oh, we should get these antique paintings. I'm like, well, I have some, like, Sweet Tooth and, like, also, like, Deface and, like, really funky modern, like, street art. And he's like, but it doesn't go with the house. I'm like, but it's art. Like,
but it goes with you.
It's not supposed to go with the house. Art is just an expression. And, like, I feel bad because I know there's a lot of amazing, like, modern houses out there by famous architects. But, like, it always kind of hurts my soul a little bit when, like, the house itself is just the piece of art and there's nowhere to put a frame on the wall or anything. And, like, you don't exist. You're just in the house, but the house, like, consumes you.
Yeah. I do find there's so many designers out there that when they're designing with a client, they're always pushing their agenda, what their design aesthetic is, on the client. And I didn't go to school for design. I learned design through what we do, flipping houses, understanding what people are looking for. Jonathan went to school for construction design. But we have always had that feeling of we're never going to force something on people. We'll open up your eyes to new new types of design or architecture that you've never seen. But at the end of the day, you're the one who lives in the house. We want to make sure this is the perfect house for you. And that's why, you know, we're at 400 episodes now. We've done 400 families we've renovated for the shows. And not a single one of those houses is the same because every homeowner is different.
And some people do want someone to come in and just totally, like,
you
know, make it like a hotel. I can just move in or whatever. But it's also like finding the right balance with stuff. And Lydia, also, like, I remember having conversations because we have a lot of vintage taxidermy. And I'm like, I don't know, maybe we shouldn't put this one in the entryway because maybe it'll put people off. And she's like, it's our house. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, they don't have to. No one else has to like it.
Also, not a conversation anyone else ever has. My taxidermy I want to put here.
But maybe also, if someone's going to come over to our house and judge us or not like us based on, like, random shit we have everywhere, like, I don't want to have them over.
It is,
I wouldn't go to someone's house and be like, how dare you put that throw pillow there?
That's
like,
so offensive.
I just, I would never, yeah.
I want to point out, we are looking at a Teddy Ruxpin with a blown out face.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so this is an example of the little creatures and things that you have everyone that, but what we love is that it's so you guys. It's so unique. No, it really is. Like, it's everything in your house is so unique. Every room and area that you go is so unique. Very thoughtfully put together. Even your wallpaper choices in each space speak to you, speak
like
to the space.
It's like a museum of you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
Well, like I said on your podcast, I think we're very lucky that we have almost the exact same our Venn diagrams are right on top of each other.
Yeah, it's
so
extremely
we like
similar.
The exact same stuff, so we kind of know. So this like exploded, melted Teddy Ruxpin is great. And it's something that, you know, like Lydia might have in her workspace, but I would have it in mine. And right now it's mm-hmm. in mine. But we share a lot of the stuff, too, because it's if I like something or she likes something, there's a better than average chance the other person is really going to like it, too. So that has been very helpful. But what advice do you give to people whose sensibilities are totally different?
Which is a lot of couples.
Most couples,
they really
it's
are.
It's really surprising.
And that, yeah. When you have that, a differentiation on what you want in your home, on top of having it all dirty and dusty and being worked on like during a renovation, that is the recipe for a disaster with relationships. And so it is really tough for a lot of people to get on the same page. Jonathan and myself, we really are almost therapists of the home space. We're trying to help people through the process, take the burden off their shoulders, and we'll deal with a lot of the hassles. But the main thing is just trying to showcase, like I'll take people to an inspiration home and trying to show them different aspects of homes that have blended styles. Mm-hmm. If it's a transitional look they're going for, or if sometimes somebody loves something very vintage, very traditional, and then somebody else is extremely modern.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let's look at spaces within the house where we can maybe go a little more one way than the other. It's tough. Like at the end of the day, we usually end up getting people to agree on the husband will lead the kitchen space, the wife will leave the master suite space. So people divide and conquer within. And at the end of the day, we also can use decor pieces and furniture pieces to blend that style too. And it makes people
right.
happy. So yeah. Not everyone's to the extreme. Like you guys are to the extreme with your style is so unique. And I honestly, we love it. Everyone we know who's ever been to your house absolutely loves it. Most couples aren't that specific with a kind of a look that they want. Most people are just like, like in a magazine when you see, what do you call it, modern? That's what most people are like.
Well, she also knows how to find, like there's a very specific wallpaper that is in the, it's in the first room of the Haunted Mansion at Disneyland.
Oh, yeah.
And
the lilies.
Yeah, and so we have this like secret bookcase stairway, and Lydia found, and that paper is really hard to find, and she was like, oh, I found it. At Bradbury and Bradbury, which is one of the oldest wallpaper. Like, she fucking found the paper!
In the United States, it's the oldest wallpaper manufacturing company. But, like, it's not even really listed on their site. You kind of have to deep dive, and then you can't even order off the site. You have to call them, and
yeah.
It's very old-fashioned, but I love it. And they make so many incredible papers.
Yeah, that, and I think, what are Scalamandre you like, too?
I like Scalamandre, yeah. I like their fabrics a little bit more.
And Lincrusta? Lincrusta, which
Yeah,
is
the paintable wallpaper.
That paintable wallpaper. Paper that's like it's like
the
texture and texture.
Yeah,
and
yeah, you did that on the room upstairs.
I did. Yeah, there was molding and there was a space which I think it might have been originally, but in the in the early part of the 20th century, in houses that couldn't afford they didn't want to spend the wood carving. Mm-hmm. They would have this like firm kind of paintable wallpaper that looked like molded carved wood, and so. Mm. That's what we put in there, and I think it looks pretty, pretty neato. But she found that shit, and she knows. She just knows how to find this amazing stuff. And so I have found that it's been such a great thing for our relationship to be able to do these projects together, because I get so excited about what thing are we going to create together, and at the end of it, it's like a pure expression of our relationship and our love for each other and our. Our excitement about working together on something and manifesting a physical representation of, that period in our lives.
You know what I love? You guys having something like this, like how you click so well in your home. It's such a big part of everyone's life, but most couples don't have that same connection with their design aesthetics. Lynn and I are very much the same. Overall, we have that same feel and look that we wanted to have in our home. And we love a lot of vintage pieces as well, which we like to blend in, but we like modern functionality. And I find one of the things that we always talk about, though, is in a relationship, I think it's very important to find something that you guys can learn to love together. So if it's similar interests, whatever it is, but your home is where you spend the majority of your life. And the fact that that is your shared interest is pretty cool. Most people don't have that.
Well, that and so
I think the only area that we differentiate not drastically is if I could, I would probably have an even crazier collection than Guillermo del Toro, and the whole house would be covered with props.
Yeah,
and craziness.
Old movie.
And Chris
props.
Sort of gets me to dial it back a little bit.
I never thought I would be that person. I never thought I would be the damper switch.
But Chris also alternatively really likes antiques, which is amazing because I love them too, but I only like them if they're functional.
Yeah.
So if they don't serve a purpose and you can't use it, like if it's just going to be something that if you touch it, if it gets a scratch, or like if you have to use it for something, and like if it's too precious, I don't want it because then it serves no purpose.
But what if the purpose is his visual enjoyment?
Ooh.
Aha! Yes!
This is therapy!
Well, so because there is a really interesting dividing line, and this might sound minor, but I wonder which side of the fence people fall on this, but I will buy like a lot of antique books and put them up for the aesthetic quality. And Lydia's like,
I'm not gonna read it.
Yeah, she's like, because she has a lot of really amazing first edition copies of things, and she's like, I don't love the idea of putting up books purely for aesthetic reasons only. Like, if you're gonna put them up, you should experience them, and they should be read. And so, where do you guys fall?
I'm with Lydia. Same.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I just love a pretty looking old book.
Yeah. I'm with Lydia. I don't like things that are too precious.
Yeah.
Like if kids don't feel comfortable running around in here and having fun in here, then there's something wrong. Like, I don't want people to feel like, oh, I can't, I can't breathe on it.
But with the kids, for example, like, we have our nieces and nephews over, and this past holiday we had 18 family members staying with us, and it was a busy house. But the kids all run around. They're just being kids. But I look at one of our dining chairs, and they're all fabric chairs, and there's a pen mark across it. And I'm like, oh. And then I kind of vented a little bit. I'm like, and she laughs. She's like, they're kids. And then I go to the living room, and one of our green, you know, those green suede chairs has a big blue pen mark across. I'm like, God. And then I had this panic moment because right now when the kids are there, I put most of our antiques and our collectibles into my office. And I'm like, I saw them in my office the other day. I was like, and I have that old guitar, the 1890 Martin guitar that I got. And I'm like, I go racing in there. Luckily, they didn't touch anything in there. But I do. There's a balance for me. Like, for example, that old guitar, I had it restrung, and it was actually almost in perfect condition. But I put nylon strings on it, so it was less stress on the guitar on the bridge. And so you could play it, but I don't want anybody playing it. I want that just to be shown on the shelf.
That's so funny.
I'm not like that.
Yeah,
like,
she's not like that at all.
If you're not gonna play that damn thing,
then
what's
the point?
Because we're getting a dog in about 3 weeks or something.
I was gonna ask you.
So we're getting a dog because we lost our kitty over the holidays. And, you know, Lydia was like, I don't, she and the cat were so connected. She was like, I don't think I can have another cat, but I don't like that there's no loving pet energy in the house.
Yeah.
And so we're going dog. And she's like, it'll be a good practice with kids because I'm very tense about like, oh, you know, because if a chair is like 200 years old, it has survived for two centuries.
It can handle that shit.
Which means it didn't have that little brat jumping up and down the back of it.
Exactly. If it survived that long, so, it means it can take it.
This is where I feel like this is the healthy part of the compromise of the relationship.
He gets upset if the floor gets scuffed, and I'm like the asshole like scraping the furniture all along it. I'm like, oh yeah, I did that. And
I wouldn't have seen that in you.
It's a floor.
It's me. I'm like, everything's like, you can't, like I would probably literally like have 2 days worth of diarrhea if I came into our house and I saw a bunch of kids like jumping up on stuff and like riding us. I'm like, no, those chairs, no.
You know, actually, your house is even more in danger because you have so many of your pieces that look like toys.
Oh, yeah.
They
fucking
are
Disney
toys.
Shit and gremlins, and they totally look.
But I play with them. I drag them around the house and stuff.
I don't want to know that. I mean, I have a joke in my act about it, how, like, you know, mint condition is one sticky finger away from becoming garbage, you know, where it's just like.
But this is funny because I bought Chris, like, unopened new Ren and Stimpy comics. But, like, this is really funny, and I'm sure everyone in the nerd world is going to hate me for this. But, like, I wanted new comics because I wanted to open and read the new comics just for myself.
Yeah.
But Chris has taken them away and hidden them from me, so I can't open them and read them.
But what he doesn't know is before you gave them to him, you opened it.
I didn't open them, but I wanted to because I was like, isn't this exciting? Now we can read. And he's like,
you're the first one.
No.
Well, as soon as she...
I was like, what? I just wanted to read them.
As soon as she said, like, oh, we should open these and read these, I was like, I'll be right back. And then I didn't hide them, per se, but they're just not out in the open.
But, like, all my collectible toys, too, the first thing, like, I found this amazing spider gremlin, and you know the seller had this whole thing about like, oh, it's been in the box, it's never been
it's
opened.
Not original, it wasn't in the movie, it was a limited edition,
but it's like one of like 20 spider gremlin NECA props. That's like, it's a smaller scale, but it's still pretty large. But it was in a brown cardboard box. So the first thing I did as soon as it came home is like whipped out the knife, pulled open that box, and I was like, yes, I have my gremlin. Like,
I
want
every
to...
nerd that's listening right now just cried a
yeah,
little.
Yeah, but it's not theirs. But it's mine. And I want to enjoy it. And I want to play with it. And I want to be able to appreciate it.
Yeah, that is...
Support for this show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
That is the definitely like a good dividing line and a good area of compromises. Sort of like, when are you, you know, overprotecting something and when are you living and when are you experiencing it and how can you... I mean, obviously, you know, if there's a Superman comic, Superman number one, you wouldn't want to take that out and read it. I know she probably would, but you wouldn't want to read it. But for most things, like, yeah, I am starting to come around and be like, yeah, you know what, they should be enjoyed and they should be appreciated because they're not doing... Unless it's purely an investment... And not like,
but
like a
most
thing.
Of the time, I find collecting of any kind is not an investment. I find most people try to say it's an investment. For example, I collect coins, and I totally admit I'm a total nerd for it. But I love old vintage coins. I have coins from 2,000 years ago, and it's awesome. It's not an investment. I'm paying like $30 or $50 for a quarter. Right. It's not an investment. I'm an idiot if it's an investment, but it's something cool to hand down to my grandkids. But what Lynn and I feel is with anything we collect, whether it's these old typewriters we have, or I have an old school bell from the 1700s, and those things, it's a story. There's a story behind it. There's a reason we have it, somewhere we got it, some cool story. And if we can't showcase these pieces to be able to talk about the stories, I don't want it.
Right.
Well, yeah, and you don't want the story to end with you. Like, I always think of the objects having a story itself. Like, what did they go through with this family, with the past family? And then I think of, like, Toy Story, the movie. Like, if your toy was just sitting on the shelf the whole time, like, that would be so boring for that toy.
Right, because I think there's sort of like a fundamental outlook that I have about... So, like, I have that pre-stored Cave Bear skeleton in the living room. And the way that I see it is that, you know, we collect these things that we love, but it's also admitting that our ownership of them is temporary.
Mm-hmm.
And because obviously no one lives forever. And so what I see is that we are merely curating these things for a time
caring for them so that they, you know, like, survive the time stream throughout, you know, throughout the, they survive the future, and that we are caring for them this time, and then they will be hopefully passed on to people who will all, because they've survived for a long period of time.
But what I don't like, you know, nowadays to find some of these items, it's a lot harder because it's so commercialized now and so easy for people to reach, you know, collectors or people looking to buy different things. And it's frustrating to me, though, when there's so many people that get taken advantage of. Like, for example, the house next door, the estate sale, they had a stamp collection, and some of these stamps were back from like the 1700s. This collection was definitely worth a lot of money, and this guy made the beneficiary sign, this stamp collector guy, he made them sign before he quoted what it would be worth, the whole collection. She had to sign something saying that he's allowed to buy it for what he appraises it at.
Which is such a conflict of interest.
Such a conflict of interest. Insane. And so he bought it for $1,800, and that's criminal. And so when I think of, you know, stuff moves around, it has different people, and we're just curating it, that just annoys me when it goes somewhere, that it's just purely for the money or the greed, and it's not actually to be enjoying. I want items, no matter what it is, to be somewhere that it's going to be enjoyed.
Yeah.
Appreciate
well, and also...
Also, like, I mean... Your house could burn down, and then you lose everything. Like, it's just, if you're not appreciating it, like, it could all be gone. It's still just
it is stuff. It still is stuff. You're absolutely right, and I've gotten better about that. But I also, you know, because there's almost nothing in our house that was manufactured in a modern factory, for me, it's also the story and the experience. Like, she and I could tell you pretty much where every piece of everything came from. And it's like, oh, we brought, you know, like, we had this shipped back from Austria because, you know, like, our first big trip was to Austria in 2015. And we had this really cool, you know, 1700s painted armoire that we had sent back. And so
very fancy.
Everything is a story, and everything was part of us, like, experiencing it together, even if it was just, you know, we were lying in bed one night. We were both surfing around, you know, looking at different, you know, either first dibs or all good things or whatever. And we, oh, look at this really cool. Oh, that's really cool. And then we got it. We know where everything was. And so it's all been a part of our relationship story.
Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, because you guys have collected a lot. And I mean, literally every time we come over, you've collected a bit more. Like, we did a show a year or two ago with William Shatner where we actually went and renovated two of his fans, like his diehard Star Trek fans. We went and renovated their fan caves. And so what I thought was very sad, though, is a lot of them, their entire garages are stuffed full of old paraphernalia and cool things, but you can't get in to see any of it. And so what we were doing is we came in and we gave it we made things more visible so they had more of a curated look and then you could showcase it. So when you get things... Do you find that sometimes you've collected so many things? Like when you showed me that one time your guest house and it was full of all these cool pieces, but it was just sort of all piled in there.
Yeah.
Does that really bother you when you can't showcase what you have?
Oh, well, that, I mean, right now, that house, we haven't started work on that one yet. So a lot of what's in there is...
Like, for that house?
I think a lot of it is for that house.
But it's also like... You know, when we could open a fucking antique store.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with the stuff that
I don't think I would want to.
No, I know. But the way that I think of it is that they're just pieces that haven't found their place yet. Like, but they will. But I don't think, and maybe I'm wrong about this, I still don't think we're hoarders per se, because we don't just, like, oh, we just, you know, I just bought 5 chairs. I mean, like, there are times where things will just show up because, like, one of us will get excited about it. But I do believe that eventually everything, you know, almost everything will have a place.
I wouldn't say you're hoarders in any way, because in your house, you have a lot of stuff, but it all has purpose and all has place. So that's not hoarding at all. Hoarding is when you get 300 rolls of toilet paper and put it in your bathtub because there's nowhere else to put it, but it's because there was a sale at Walmart.
Yeah.
That's hoarding.
But one of my...
piles of papers just for no reason.
But one of the things that I'm really proud of, and I think I've even told you this, and this is an honest to God truth, is that, you know, I respect Lydia's opinion so much that when I redid this podcast cabin and, you know, the first time it was done and she came in, she was like, "You've done a really amazing job here." I was like, I almost wanted to cry because I just felt like it was such a... Well, yeah, because it's like her opinion matters to me more than anyone else's. And so for her to say, like, "You did a really amazing job and you did this pretty much on your own." And the truth is, like, I still was saying, like, "Oh, what do you think about this?" I was still tapping her opinions.
Secretly tapping her.
Here and there. But I was really proud of that because she genuinely said, "Oh, this is really cool what you did to this room." And that meant a lot to me.
Oh, I think
it's amazing in here.
It is.
And it's so true to, like, who you are and what you love and just everything.
Yeah. And you can see that too. Everything I do too, even whether it's on the shows or whether we're doing an appearance on something else or a fan engagement, like a, I don't know, like a home show or something. Everything I do, I always kind of lean over to Linda and I get that last little like bit of approval because she is, like you said with Lydia, she's almost always right about whatever it is that she says or whatever the opinion is. And it's always coming from a place of love. I know she has my best interests in mind as well. And I just like having that extra little bit of either you're going to confirm what I was already thinking or you're going to take it to an even better level.
That is, so the thing you just said, I think, is one of the most important relationship things that people can understand, and hopefully they do, because I think it could avoid a lot of, you know, because every couple has, you know, there are points where you're just tired and you have stupid arguments over nothing and stuff. But it's sort of the understanding that, like, no matter what, I am always going to come from a place of love. And, you know, Lydia is always going to come from a place of love. It's never to try to, you know, like, if you understand that as a couple, I feel like you could avoid a lot of stuff. Because even if there's something you don't understand, you still know, like, well, they're not trying to fuck me over. Like, it's, you know, like, obviously the intent. So even if you don't agree, understanding that the intention is altruistic is
healthy. Well, I would think that the end result would also showcase that. Because, like, it'd be very transparent if somebody did something based off of, like, yeah, well, I just wanted this thing, so I did this thing and, like, live with it. Where, like, with everything that I do, you know, yes, I do things quickly and I can make really rash decisions and, like, jump into it really fast. But with every single choice and every step along the way, it's like I'm doing it for Chris in a sense. Yeah. So it's all coming from a place of love, so that it's almost like a physical, like,
manifestation
of the love to make it better and for him.
And I think having different, you know, because everybody's different. Every single person, I'm even a twin, but Jonathan and I are very different. And people don't know this. But, you know, it comes from a place of love. But I do find, like, a lot of times when we have an argument, it does come from our perspective. Like, and we always, and Linda and I remind ourselves of this all the time, because I communicate one way. I'm sort of loud and I'm to the point. And like Jonathan and me, when we communicate with each other, we just get to the point. It's like a short form conversation. We've had this our whole lives and it's very efficient and I love it. But if I turn and talk that way to Lydia, or if I turn and talk that way to Linda, or if I talk that way to you, I find sometimes people forget that what I'm intending to come across is not how it's received.
Because they don't have that years of that shorthand and the understanding.
Exactly. And so that a lot of our arguments is that I come talking to Linda very sort of that short to the point, and then she needs more time to kind of like think things through and communicate, and then it just comes across aggressive. And then sometimes there's where she's really over, like, working some thought. Yeah, and then I'm just like, we need to get to the point here. Let's just get to the point here.
No, again, I'm still just like two of you combined.
Yeah, she is.
Subtlety is not my forte. So, like, I'm always very blunt, good or bad. And I also have, like, a resting bitch voice. So I'll say things, and especially if I'm a little tired or I'm just, like, being blunt, I just sound like an asshole. Even though, even if I'm saying something nice, it'll just sound like, wait, is that, like,
I really love you tonight.
I was like, yes.
Whoa, wait, what? Is that sarcastic? What are you saying?
When we first started dating, when we were going to get married, she was like, listen, you know, like, I'm kind of honest to a fault, maybe, but she said, I will always be straight with you, and I will always tell you what I feel, no matter, like, what the consequences of that are, because I don't know how else to be.
But then I'm overly communicative about that, because if I have an opinion or if I don't understand something, it's like, yeah, I'll keep sort of rerunning it, and it's almost like, you know, it's almost like a math equation, how there can be multiple ways to solve one equation, where I might have a very vastly different way of getting to the end that you do. Mm-hmm. So if I have a conclusion and I get there, well, it's like, okay, well, now we have to go backtrack and go through whatever this is to get there. So I'm very blunt and very to the point, but now we have to overly communicate this thing because now I'm just confused.
But also the other side of that is that, you know, she's like, but if I tell you something, you know you can believe it. So if I say, like, hey, I really love this room that you did, I know she means I really love this room. Yeah. If she didn't like it, she'd be like, oh, I don't know. I mean,
direct communication, whether you want to hear it or not, is the basis of everything I believe in a relationship. And I think that's one thing that does help Linda and me, is because I've never understood when people communicate, whether it's in a relationship or just with friends or coworkers, when you say what you don't mean. Mm-hmm. But if you actually think about it in society, everyone does that. And I'm like, all you're doing is creating confusion and bad communication.
Because no one wants to hurt anyone's feelings, and no one wants the consequences, and no one wants to be the, you know, the bearer of negative news. And because it can, a lot of times, totally backfire and create a situation. You're like, I fucking shouldn't have said anything.
But see, I've always, like, for better or worse, with all of my friendships and everybody in my life, I've always been that person where I'll be like, you know what? I would rather you hate me for being honest with you than my having to stand here to save this friendship that's now built on a lie because I didn't tell you whatever this thing was.
Do you find now with how direct I am compared to how sort of – and Linda's the most heartfelt person you'll ever meet. Like she really puts everyone else's emotions first. Have I sort of corrupted you to the dark side of my ways? Or because I feel you've pulled me a little in your direction.
Blunt? Yeah, you have influenced me in a positive way that, you know, encourages me to speak up whenever I, you know, feel like it. But what I find that people don't expect from me is when I am upset or not even upset, but just not like super bubbly, they think I'm mad. And I'm like, I don't have to be like, you know, bouncing off the walls to be happy. Like, just because I'm not smiling at you doesn't mean I'm unhappy or like I'm mad at you. So what annoys me is if I speak up, I'm taken as like being upset or like being bitchy. Not like to you, but like just in general. Right. And I don't think that's fair.
No,
that's
right.
Yeah, just because I'm typically not loud.
Well, I think like you had said earlier, like knowing that it always comes from a place of love.
Exactly.
When we communicate, whether she speaks up or whether I'm the one that's like babble talking because I always do, we always end up knowing there are multiple ways to come to a solution. There are multiple ways to solve whatever the issue is. At the end of the day, this is even the same in design. There's more than one way to design a room.
In the end, we realize like, what are we fighting about? Like we're just talking about the same thing, and it's just semantics.
Well, I also think they're sort of unfair gender dynamics.
Totally.
Like when a guy kind of says what he wants, people are like, that dude's assertive, and when a woman asserts herself and
she's
people are
bitchy.
Like, yeah. And so it's a completely imbalance. So like what she was saying in the beginning, like working with contractors and subcontractors, you know, not taking her seriously. It's like, what the fuck is she supposed to do? You know, if like you're not like what?
Well, and like there's a lot of times like where even not that long ago where it's like, you know, things are getting done and we're doing all this work. And like, you know, if I'm trying to get something done quickly, but I have to check in with Chris and someone's coming back to me. And I was like, you know, why are you asking me? I told you you need to call Chris. And it wasn't that long ago where someone was like hesitant and kind of having this panic attack to call Chris. And I was like, are you afraid of him? He's not the one you should be afraid of. And they were like, what? And I was like, yeah.
They just hear this.
He's not the one that you should be afraid of. Like, just call him right now. Yeah.
And it is, you know, actually, we find the same thing, though. Like people will be afraid to talk to me.
That's so weird.
And then they'll talk to Linda. I mean, I think the way we communicate, too, again, with me being very to the point, I think sometimes that is a little bit more fearful. People don't want to kind of be, like, they think they're going to be in trouble with me, which is never not the case. But they find it. Linda's so easy to talk to, and she really, you know, not that I don't listen to people when I talk to them, but Linda really listens and takes in what you're saying, and I just kind of get to the point more, and I think it does scare people.
Yeah, which is funny, because I don't think I've, in general, I don't think I've given anyone a reason.
You usually then tell them to talk to me.
Yeah, I do. I'm like, oh, so, you're going to have to talk to Lydia about that. I don't know.
You're gonna have to come back
I don't
to
know.
Anyway.
Yeah. So I don't know if that's another sort of like a weird fucked up gender dynamic of like, if you talk to the guy, he's gonna, like, I honestly don't know.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
But I would love to find out how many episodes of your podcast are you into now?
So
today was the sixth.
Yeah, today we posted the sixth. Yeah.
How many have you recorded?
We've recorded 25.
Oh my gosh.
Nice. Yeah.
So
see, that's
you guys are not messing around.
So this is the funny thing. So our podcast originally, At Home with Linda and Drew Scott, the whole purpose here was Linda and me, we wanted to do this for years. And we wanted to, my schedule's so busy with filming, and we keep very busy schedules. So this was our chance to kind of slow down a little bit, relax, enjoy some time together with people that are amazing, inspiring people, share stories. And so my way of interpreting that first conversation with Linda to spend more time together, relax, and do a podcast was to block shoot 22.
Sure.
Yeah. And so we recorded a bunch in a row there, and it started to stress Linda out a little bit.
No,
so.
But I was exactly like you in the design situation. I was like, are we not going to talk about it some more? Because, like, he went and booked all these things,
right.
And I thought.
I was like, all right, Tuesday at 10 a.m. Yeah. Whoa. What?
Like, yeah. I hired on our podcast producer. I got everything going. I set up all the editing and everything that had to be done, and we just got right into it. And after we finished, like, Linda said, holy shit, like, that was stressful. But it was actually kind of invigorating. Yes, thank you. Me good with words, but it was invigorating because we got this thing we wanted to do for so many years.
Yeah.
Out the gate, and you know how we actually did with our magazine Reveal. So we just launched Reveal as well, and so I said in one of our big meetings, and this is a massive meeting with, you know, 20 to 30 of our people on our editorial team and everybody at Meredith and our team. And I just said in the meeting, like, oh, yes, and in Reveal, I want to make sure one of our mentions in every magazine is our podcast, At Home with Linda and Drew Scott. There will be a nice big lower third, and we're going to have that mention in the magazine. And everybody looked at each other because nobody had been told this before. And it was like, oh, okay, yeah, we'll definitely do this.
And we're like a month away from publishing.
Yeah, we were publishing in a month. And so I look over at Linda, and then after the meeting, she's like, what was that? And I'm like, that's my way of making sure that we do this because I don't want to keep talking about it. And so then we did. And here we go. And we've had amazing, amazing time so far. And the fans seem to love it. But it's a deeper dive into our lives that people aren't used to seeing.
Well, also, it's like, you know, people get a sense of you from the show. But in a way, you and Jonathan are like, I don't know, like tour guides in a way. You're sort of tour guide through this process. And so it's not like... I mean, I think people definitely get a sense of you from watching the show, but it can be difficult to really get to know you on a deeper level because there's just no time for that on the show.
No, and 100%, you're exactly right. The show is not the Drew and Jonathan show. The show is us trying to help families. And so these families are really the show, and you get to see some of our personalities throughout, but... That's why for us to be able to dig deeper, pull back the curtains and see our lives more, but also to have guests like yourself. And we had Howie Mandel. We just, you know, posted Carter Oosterhaus and Amy Smart and all these amazing people that are really great storytellers. They have fascinating lives, but a lot of their fans and people out there haven't seen that deeper dive. That's just fun for us. We just feel, which I'm sure is the same for you, if we sit down and chat with people that we really love and admire, that will come through and the fans will enjoy it.
Well, and and I think everyone sort of takes their home for granted. They take their home space for granted in the sense of like, oh, it's just a place it's just a place you go every night rather than like this place is the foundation of, you know, you spend a considerable percentage of your life there. It's an expression of who you are and how you live and your consumerism and your, you know, like you get good news in your home, you get bad news in your home, you have good memories, bad memories. Like it sort of builds the story of you. And yet people, I think, just go, whatever. And so it is a very shared human experience that I think a lot of people don't necessarily think of a lot. And I think it's good that people just get more of a sense of who you and Linda are as humans. Because everything you collaborate with someone else on has a different chemistry and a different flavor. Yeah. And so that's what's fun is getting to play with that and see, like, what is a thing that we make together? What does that look like?
Yeah, and the more everyone gets to see more of Linda, which they really, really love. Like, that's the one note we hear all the time. If Linda appears on one of our shows, they're like, can we have more Linda? Can we have more? And so it's really been a fun, at least for me. I mean, obviously, speak for yourself.
It has been really fun.
It's been fun to pull her to the foreground a little bit more because she's been a big part of our team ever since we met 10 years ago.
And how do you, because, you know, like, people would say to me, oh my God, you know, you have like a million jobs and you're so busy and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not the Scott brothers. Like, you legitimately in the middle of, you know, all you have multiple shows on HGTV, you have a furniture line, you have this website, you have the magazine now, you have the podcast now. So how are you, and I feel like we've sort of talked about this before, like, how are you managing balance in your life for the personal stuff? Because when we're young, you know, our careers can be the thing that's in the forefront. Oh, we got to build this career because we got to do it. It's, you know, like, it's important. I mean, and then I feel like as we start to get older, we're like, well, it is nice, but
it doesn't define
it. It doesn't define, you know, like, the life stuff is really important. The people that we spend time with, you know, contributing to those relationships, having human experiences, you know, jobs may come and go, but the people in your life are the real meaning.
And I think it does just take age to really start to realize that. I know when I was younger, before Linda, I hadn't really, I dated a little bit here and there, but I was never in a serious relationship. I always took my work seriously, and it was always the number one thing. Build a career. I know I can do something big, whatever it is, and go, go, go. And Linda being in my life, we've been together almost 10 years now, that's changed because then you realize your priorities. I mean, Property Brothers, we love what we do. We love helping families with our magazine, our marketplace, Casaza, everything we do. I love the business. But what I've started to realize is that is amazing, and that is also a way that we can grow our voice to do really good things in this world. But family is everything.
Mm-hmm.
The time with Linda is everything for me. And so we've brought in an amazing team. You know, between our offices in Nashville and Vegas and Toronto, you know, we have hundreds of staff, and they are the best in the best of the best in those different areas that they work. So our production entity, it can run itself. We'll come in and we work on overseeing certain things, but then they'll run with it. And then that gives Linda and me more time that we can actually focus on us, because we want to have kids too.
Linda, how are you forcing some balance into this man's life?
I think it's being intentional about it, because I know that when he says all these things, I know that he means it. But when you're in the thick of the crazy schedule, it is hard to come up for air and think like, oh shit, I'm doing the thing that I said I wasn't going to do, which is working from the minute you wake up to the minute you pass out. So for us, we've been trying to be more intentional about it and scheduling in like blocked off times. Like whether we have plans or not, it's just like scheduling evening time.
It sounds so unromantic to schedule your date nights, but honestly, when you have a schedule like what we do, we have to do it, because if it's not there, something will take the place.
It is really important, because especially if you don't, if you fail to plan, you'll just sit around, or you'll get distracted, or you'll do something else, and then you're not spending time together. Like, we make a point. Like, you know, we have at least one date night every week, mm-hmm. even if it's just going out to dinner, where we just, you know, like, focus on each other. You know, like, we go to this place that's way across town from where we live, so we're in the car together the whole time, and we're not, you know, and then we sort of talk about, oh, when we get home, like, what, you know, do you want to watch a horror movie? Do you want to start a new series or stuff? And so, like, we really try to, and even though like the scheduling of the time, like you said, people are like, oh, but that's not spur of the moment. It's like, yeah, but if you once you're in the moment, it feels great that you're doing it. It doesn't matter that you schedule it. If you schedule it, it means that you value the relationship.
If you don't schedule it, it might not happen.
Exactly. And that's why I love that outlook on the situation, because I think a lot of people that maybe don't have the crazy busy schedule that we have might not appreciate the same need to schedule, because they'll just, you know, if it's a 9-to-5 that somebody works and they know every evening's off, then they have the ability to be a little bit more ebb and flow. Right. We are not 9-to-5. We're on a plane every 2 days. It has to be scheduled in. And then, as you said, in the moment, then that's where the spontaneity comes.
I think that goes for parents as well, 9-to-5 or not. I think everyone struggles with not having enough time when really it's just not making the time for something.
Or not managing your time in a way that can give you that time together. But especially knowing we want to have kids soon as well, we needed to focus. Yeah.
Yep.
Hey, all the same time.
Yeah.
We'll call you.
Shall we schedule that in as well?
Yeah, exactly. All right. We're taking a swing at it today. Hey, Ma.
We'll be in the guest suite.
My mom just showed up.
Yeah. Time, and right? Go. Yep, go.
Is it interesting how your mom shows up?
Oh, my
up,
God.
Right,
is that when you walked in?
Yeah.
Is that when you walked in?
She felt that we were all talking about
babies. Did you feel that you were?
I heard the whole.
Do you understand that, like, when you talk about it in front of your mom, that's a fucking legally binding contract now.
For me and for you.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you can't say that in front of an Italian mother and not have it be legally binding.
All right. I'll send you the date when I know.
Oh, my gosh.
But I think this has been good for us, because scheduling those days together is starting to give ourselves more of that habit. Once you've built the habit of that time off where it's just the two of you, and then moving into having kids, you need all that spare time you can get because you're going to fill it with the kids.
Yeah.
But here's a question for you guys. How do you deal with, I'm the worst when it comes to always, I like to respond to emails the moment they come in. The moment
if
they come
I
in.
I could, honestly, if I could, like, break his phone at night, I would.
I'll also text you before I break Drew's phone.
Like, I
have another joke in my act about how So I can't stand the red dot on a phone, like in a text or emails. And Lydia's number of unanswered things is so high.
No,
give me your phone. Give me your phone.
And I'm like, I get vertigo looking. I'm like, how can you have 1,000 un... She goes, because it's not a priority. I don't know.
Okay, well, this is low right now. But Linda has... Oh, because you probably just went through or deleted old stuff. She has 10 un...
Okay, that's not bad.
205 unread emails.
Where's your phone?
Oh, it's in my purse.
Usually her emails are mine, like 1,000.
If I had to guess, I probably have about 100 unlistened to voicemails. Like,
but I don't understand.
Over 50, I'm probably never going to respond to you text messages. And I would wager to say over 5,000 emails.
See, that's what Linda's email actually usually says something like 17,000, and she'll make an excuse.
Okay.
So I have.
It didn't back up properly.
I have 103 unheard voicemails. I have 8,294 unanswered emails.
Oh my god!
And 78 text messages that I may or may not ever.
I appreciate you responding to our text messages.
Oh my god! That number is so. Look at that. That's not even a dot. That's a line.
It has a comma in there.
Yeah, there should never be a comma.
I was gonna say 205. That's
no,
enough.
My email says 17,000.
I don't know how
my
I have.
Gmail
who has called me? Why do I have
3,811?
Oh my gosh! That
but
just
it's
hurts
not,
my.
That's
yeah,
not
I have 103
stuff.
Voicemails.
I don't get like
that's
so
crazy.
Those are 103 people who have taken you off their Christmas card list.
Yeah, that is.
How do you? Linda and I try to implement. Once we're done, when we're in the evening, no more texting. Certain things you have to get back to, but in the evening.
I have tried that one. I think that after 9 p.m., there should be no more cell phones.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I put mine in Do Not Disturb and sleep, but this one over here.
But okay, I'll tell you.
Yeah, like who are you texting?
I have no idea.
This is one other thing, though. So I'll try and blame it on this. It's my mom's fault. Jonathan and I got my mom addicted to an app. It's a Scrabble app, playing Scrabble. My mom loves Scrabble, but she's always only ever played the board game. So now, literally, our mom doesn't message us to say, hi, I love you, thinking of you. She just messages to say, before you go to bed, can you play your move? Come on, play your move.
It's your turn.
And so in the evening, I'm trying to be a polite son, bonding with my mom, playing this game, but all Linda sees is me on my phone.
Well, and I don't want to use this as an excuse, but I guess I'm going to. But because we work in... like a creative field that's not like a traditional 9-to-5 job, there are things that don't tend to follow the same rules of like, oh, this is for the office and I'll tackle this when I get into the office. And so when inspiration strikes or you have an idea, you need to, or if there's a production and someone's like, oh my God, it's 10 o'clock, but we need this answered right now. It can be hard.
See, I have started to, cause I used to like, I would get emails and like, auditions and, you know, photo shoots would come through and all sorts of stuff. And I used to, you know, if someone told me to jump, it was always, how high? And I'll do it twice as far and whatever. And I have recently started implementing, like, no, if it's a work email, if it comes through after, like, 6 or 7, like, I'm not touching it. I'm not touching my phone. I'm not looking at anything until the next morning after I've had my coffee.
And you do kind of have to condition the world to understand, like, that's how this person operates. But there is a transitional period.
When we have children, I think it's important not to be on your phone at meals and, like, running around. Like, it should be, like, a focused family time. And, you know, when you're in bed with your spouse, be in bed with your spouse. Don't be texting your buddy.
I do hate it.
You're with someone else.
Well, no, I do hate that I do that. I really do. But and it's that thing in my mind that I've always been. It's sort of like I'm a bit of a clean freak and everything too. And I like things in their place. And organizing an idea or a thought, I like things done.
Did you
wave
your hand like
yeah. Right
you're
now
like
he's looking longingly into my eyes.
He's like
he
that
himself.
On his phone.
Well, you know what? Well, the reason that I have
not in the real world.
Zero unanswered emails just because I've so meticulously sorted my email. So it's like, you know, spam goes into one thing. And so it's like, I know what each folder is for. But I guess, I don't know. It's something I'm working on.
It's something I'm working on. But have you read or listened to Essentialism?
No.
Have you heard of Essentialism is all about, you look at all the busyness that we have in life and the fact that so many people nowadays, they try and take on so many things and you can never really master too many things. Like, to really pare down to what is, and I'm not just talking about work-related, but even, like, in your life, what's important to you, and the number of things that people try to take on, you can never really fully commit to what's out there. So essentialism is really talking about paring down to what truly is the most important, things that are impactful and things that mean the most to you, especially family is usually at the core of that. And I love it because it is that reminder. Linda and I just have to look at each other and say, Essentialism. And then we realize, no, it's not. I can leave those emails until tomorrow.
Well, that is a good thing to understand because it's so easy to get led around by life.
Yes.
And sort of realizing, like, oh, no, you can make some of the rules. But I, you know, listen, I don't want to make gender distinctions about how our brains work. But I do find that maybe this is just me or maybe this is other men. But I'm only able to focus on one thing at a time. And Lydia can multitask.
Yeah, I can have multiple conversations at once that probably don't make sense to anybody.
So the times that I will get sort of like closed off with her is when I'm working on something and she'll go, hey, what you doing over there? I'm like, can't talk right now. Because if I break what I'm doing, I will completely forget it and I will lose the focus and like the whole thing will come crumbling down until I get it out.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm really bad, but she's good at like,
where
you know,
I'm
sort
like
of packet
cat,
switching
like,
and, you know.
In, like, what's yeah. going on over
it's
there?
So fascinating to me when you look at like your personality. It's like there's a little bit of me in Lydia. There's a little bit of me in Chris. A little bit of Linda in each of you as well. It's mm-hmm. so fascinating to me to see how so many different people are little bits of each other in the way they respond. And that's what, mm-hmm. you know, that's what makes the world an amazing place is because we're all different.
Yeah.
We all react differently. Makes this a chaotic place as well. Yeah. But I think that's, for me, it's exciting to always learn how other people cope with things because it's something that I can take in and understand if that's something that will work better for me or
well,
I learn from everything.
Ultimately it is about understanding and communication and knowing. I think it's understanding and communication. And I'm not saying I'm amazing at it, but it's about understanding and communication and also that base level of like, you know, our intention is to always have each other's back, to always, you know, like there's no ulterior motives. Mm-hmm. It's like we are on each other's team no matter what, even when we don't agree on things.
Yeah.
So that way everything doesn't mean everything, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
like anything that comes along doesn't mean the relationship or it doesn't
right.
mean it's like, yeah,
yeah,
we had a dumb argument about something because we were both tired or we're both overworked or we're both this, but it doesn't mean like we don't love each other and that we're not always that, you know, it's like,
yeah.
I mean, I will admit I'm maybe a little more dramatic though. Like I'm remembering a conversation we had not that long ago where I was like, where I literally said to Chris, I was like, haven't you ever seen Barefoot in the Park or like read the book or the play by Neil Simon? And he had no idea what I was talking about. I was like, I'm embarrassed to admit this, but that character, the lead woman, the New England character played by Jane Fonda and that, I was like, that's basically me. It's like very much all or very much nothing. And like, I think one of the opening scenes, like they're on their honeymoon and they're in the hotel and he has to leave for work. And she's like, no, don't leave. Oh, is it over? You don't love me anymore? And I'm like, I'm a little bit like, I can be very much like that, and I don't mean to, but like
that is so funny because that is Linda to a T. So I'm literally,
we'll have like the tiniest little spat about like. No, I can't even think of an example. And I'm like, oh my God, do you not love me anymore? And he's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, oh my God, it's over.
I remember as we were in bed watching the movie and I get up to go to the bathroom. Where are you going? I'm peeing. I'm going to pee.
That was stupid.
Yeah. Oh my God.
But I got you a bedpan.
Yeah.
And I am so the furthest opposite from that
right.
because I'll just be like, whether I'm going to pee or whether I'm going away on a one-week trip for work, I have the same reaction when I leave, like, Kate, love you, kiss, talk to you in a bit. And then Linda is the one that has that same
reaction.
I'm a
koala. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, she literally grabs me. I'm like, I'm literally late. I got to go for a meeting. She's koaling on my leg. I'm like, I got to go. What?
Well,
20 seconds.
The thing that I think is really important is that we try to never go to bed with, you know, with any kind of anything. Like, we always kiss goodnight and say I love you and, you know, when we're on the phone, when we leave, it's always mm-hmm. like, you know, like you have to remember that your relationship needs to be maintained. And it's sort of like houses. It's like, oh, sure, it's fun to build a new house, but to maintain a house, like you especially hear from first-time homeowners where they're like, God damn it, there was a flood and I had to deal with it. It's like, yes, you have to maintain anything that's worth having, you have to maintain. It's the day to day. So you have to make those deposits every day to, like, I love you, I'm checking in. You need to know
which deposits are you talking about? Your mom just walked in the door again. What are we talking about? But no, I mean, it's very much the case.
No, but actually, this was one time I was not making a filthy double entendre, and I'm now embarrassed. Now I'm embarrassed for myself.
I find the one thing, because before Linda, I'd never been in a long relationship, and that is the thing that I'm always learning is you know, sort of, it's an ongoing process. No relationship, doesn't matter what you see on, you know, on TV or anything else, nobody's in that perfect relationship where there's never a disagreement or an argument, and anything that you see is like that. It's just kind of put on, and that's what you see on the front. Everyone has to go through certain moments of ups and downs, and it's how you get through that together. And we have that same philosophy. We do not go to bed angry. Get it out, we deal with it, we say I love you, we kiss. But my question for you, how many times in a day do you guys say I love you? Like, what's an appropriate number of times?
I think it's unique to the couple, but for us it's a lot. Like, Lydia and I will have a full on conversation, and then 5 minutes later she'll call back and go, I just want to say I love you one more time. Like, she does it all the time. And I love it because it, you know, like, it means that she was thinking about me. It was important for her to let me know that. And so I find that I have started doing stuff like that more, because it feels good. And I feel like, well, I want, if she's doing this for me, I don't want to take it for granted. I feel like maybe she wants that she wants to be able to hear that too, so that you're not just taking, because it can be very easy for people to sort of get lazy. And it's like, oh, you're the person in a relationship that does this, and I'm the person in a relationship that does this. But it's like, oh, well, if someone's communicating with you in a certain way, it might be because they also
want to receive,
like appreciate that type of communication, because that's how they communicate whatever that is. And so how do we kind of come together on that?
We had in early on, because we say it all the time now, but earlier in the relationship, Linda, literally our sentence would be like, if it's sort of like a, how you doing? I love you.
Oh,
I love you. It's like every other word is I love you. And I'm like, let's save it up. Let's save it up for a few really good ones in the day. Like, really momentous moments to say I love you.
So yours more qualitative.
Yeah.
Quantitative. We do it a lot. And I think you laugh about it, but you do it a lot as well, whether it's an emoji or, you know.
But I know it means a lot to her too. So that's the one thing, you know, like what Linda gives is like way up here. And then what I used to give is like, maybe she's like 100, I'm like a 10. And so if I like triple my efforts and I go all the way up to 30, I'm still 70 below her.
Well, you can't.
Yeah, but it's not like, who's measuring that? What I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's
but a relationship can't be like set it and forget it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, unless both people have that agreement. If both people have that agreement, then that's fine. But I feel like it's like a... You know, it's a plant. You don't just water a plant once and be like, it's done. You know, it's like you have to give it the proper soil and fertilize it. And you have to, the pot, when it gets bigger, you have to replant it, and you have to make sure that you're maintaining it.
You
and so
flow with it,
you have to embrace the process of it, and not just that, the sort of snapshot of highlights of like, oh, we're on a romantic trip, and then, hey, we went on a romantic trip, what's the problem? What do I got to say? I love you all the time. It's like, you have to fucking show the other person, you got to, like, fucking work at it. Like, you have to show the other, you know, you have to make efforts. You can't just,
you have to show
you know, a marriage isn't just like, oh, we got married, so I don't got to worry about it no more.
It's like, or like, I know you love me, so I don't have to show it.
Yeah,
like, you know, but you have
in
to show it.
In that whole, so we had a chat, because, again, wanting to have kids, we were talking about, we had our whole family around, and Jonathan was actually the instigator to make this worse for me. But we were talking about having kids, and, you know, when you have kids, you have to change diapers and stuff, and I sort of made a comment, like, not looking forward to that. And then somehow it got turned around to where Linda says to me, she's like, wait, so you're saying you're not going to change diapers, so
no,
I have to be the one that changes diapers?
Jonathan asked you that.
Or Jonathan asked me in a directed way that made me look bad. And I'm like, no, I never said that. I was saying that I'm not looking forward to it. And then Linda's like, in the lack of other terms, Linda was basically saying she wants me to enjoy changing the kids' diapers.
No!
There's something like
you're
that.
You're getting it mixed up. I was playing along, but everyone was blowing it out of proportion, saying like, oh, Drew says he's never going to change diapers.
Yeah, so at the end of dinner, my parents
like
and every my mom actually called me the next day really upset. And my mom was like, I'm really upset because I feel that that's not the right way you should approach it. And I'm like, Mom, I'm like, they're all making me look bad. I never said that. And then I said, somebody said the whole thing about they want you, it's different with your kids, and you want you to enjoy changing the diapers. I'm like, who the fuck ever enjoys changing diapers? I don't want to be shit on. I don't want to be pissed on. I'm like, I'll do it. It's my responsibility, but I don't want to enjoy it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You talk to parents who have, like, you know, multiple kids are like, oh, you're gonna get shit on and you're gonna get puked
on
and you know it's like my, a friend of mine is like, oh yeah, you'll have those moments where you'll just be at the grocery store and then the baby will just shit up its own back in like a skunk stripe and you're like, well, I guess I'll just leave this basket here and go. And they're like, you have to. But what I'll tell you what I am looking forward to with that is just like realizing that sometimes life can be messy and that's okay and you just clean it up and move on. Like it's not, it's I feel like Lydia is really helping me get out of some of my perfectionism, which is perfectionism is boring anyway. It's like it's an unrealistic ideal and it doesn't really exist. And you know, like there's no artistry in perfection. Like real life has,
there's beauty in imperfection.
Exactly. Yeah. Like even like some of my best stand-up shows are when like, you know, like something, you know, like something weird happened in the room, like a joke didn't land or someone said something in the audience or like I like kicked over the mic stand by accident, you know, like leaning on it. And it's like then the best moments come out of those because those are like shared human experiences rather than everything being perfectly polished and planned. Like that's kind of boring.
Yeah. Like my favorite part of like SNL bits is when they break, when the comedians break and it's like, oh, they're human.
Right.
But I think Linda's been great for me. What's that?
You can't plan for stuff. No. Like in any aspect of life, the one most annoying but true sayings, I mean, I'm not religious or anything, but the whole like man proposes, God disposes. Like you can plan as much as you want, but that doesn't mean it's actually going to happen.
No, and if you, in any aspect of life, and I think our work life as well, we've seen that, you can plan yourself to the nth degree, but there's always going to be something changing. And in the beginning, when I was growing up, I wanted to be an actor and a director. That's what I wanted to do. There's nothing getting in the way of that. I wanted to be some action superstar, but it wasn't happening. I was auditioning. I wasn't getting that. And then my life ebbed and flowed in this way that real estate ended up getting into a hosting opportunity. And if I didn't go, if I resisted that too much, then I wouldn't be where I am today. And I think it's exciting to know that you don't know what's going to happen to you in 5, 10, 20 years and to go with it. And especially in the relationship too for Linda and me, it's exciting for me to see myself letting go of some of that perfectionism and letting go of some of the obsessing over everything being this perfect way that it should be. And
for the listener at home, Lydia just poked my leg.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah.
He's right. You're both right.
No, you're totally right. And it's actually making life more enjoyable. And Linda and I are finding so many cool new experiences.
You can't live and enjoy the moment if you're obsessing over all the details because then you're not being in the moment. You're thinking about a result. You're thinking about each thing. I'm curious, Linda, what you, and then I think, oh yeah, we're, oh wow. I can't believe we've been talking for like an hour, 20 minutes.
Oh, really?
Like 15 minutes. So what, I'm just curious to hear from Linda, like, What did you want to do when you were growing up? And like, what were your visions and how has that manifested and what has been surprising to you?
I'm still figuring it out. Every day I wake up, I'm like, what am I going to do with my life? I want to build a boutique hotel out of historic homes. I want to write kids' books. I want to travel the world and visit all the happiest places on earth. So growing up, I also had all those big ideas, and I feel like I'm still trying to figure it out, which is the fun part, too, because now I have someone who is an implementer of my big ideas. So, yeah, I'm excited for what we'll create together. And I've always also wanted to be a creative director, not knowing what the heck that meant. And now that we're here, it's like, oh, it's just one of those things that's like a goal that you meet and then it's like, okay.
There's more than just that.
Yeah, there's more than, you know, the title means nothing.
You should see her notebook from when she was a kid, like right up until now. She always doodles and her creativity. It is, that should become a movie. Like all the creativity.
Well, but then people would know how crazy I am. So it's a long list of things. I want to have a bookstore / record shop / ice cream parlor cafe.
Sustainable farm is one that we really want to work towards. We love the idea, or actually more of a regenerative farm and building a space. So there's
about Biggest Little Farm.
Yeah. Oh, I was thinking about you guys because we were at the farmer's market and they were at, they had a booth there.
Oh, that's awesome.
Did you see the documentary yet?
Yes.
It's incredible. I'm podcasting John Chester in a couple days. So I'm going to go to their farm and I'm so excited about it because there's so much about that documentary that I think is so applicable to life of like, you get this idea in your head of like what you think your perfect outcome is, and they would achieve it. And then all that would do is open up 50 new problems that were more complicated than what they had before. And so, and every time they tried to fight the problem, they would it wouldn't work, at least according to the documentary. And so they had to figure out how to work with the problem, to implement the problem, to create this sustainable ecosystem. And I just think it was so to me, the takeaway is like, you don't know what's coming. Even your best case scenario in your head is going to just have more stresses, more problems, more responsibilities. It's not going to fix your life. So how do you, you know, it's okay to grow and it's okay to, you know, want more, but how do you work with the things that come along that are challenging in life to, you know, like how do you move with life instead of trying to to fight
it's like
against
embracing
it?
Embracing the chaos.
Embracing the chaos.
I think when I was young, I don't know if it was my dad or somebody had told me when I was a kid, you know, the saying like don't sweat the small stuff.
And my dad used to say that all the time.
Yeah. So, but somebody added on to that to me that, you know, the whole saying don't sweat the small stuff, just the big stuff. But guess what? There's a missing sentence. And my dad said the missing part is it's all small
That's
stuff.
What my dad said. Don't sweat the small stuff and it's all small stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I put that at the end of my last comedy special because that was his that was his thing. Don't sweat the small. Now, granted, my dad was an obsessor. He sweated a lot of small stuff, but he, because he did that, he learned that, you know, because as you get older, you when you look back at like everything that I obsessed over and stressed about and was anxious about, like almost none of the worst case scenarios came true. And I wasted all that time. You know, like all those valuable inventing minutes, you know, like, you know,
I'm the opposite of inventing stresses.
Yeah.
I'm like the anti-manifested stress.
Oh, and she's great about like, you know, because I will immediately catastrophize. I'm like, okay, we're getting a dog. The dog's going to be a big dog. Do we need to start moving stuff around?
Like talking about how it's going to pee places. And I'm like, I've never had a dog pee in
there. What if we get up in the middle of the night and trip over it down there? And she's like, why are you inventing? And I go, I'm just trying to be prepared.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I talked to Linda about that because sometimes she'll go to worst case scenarios nonstop. I'm like, I'm not going to live in a bubble. I'm like, I want to enjoy life. Let's enjoy life. But it's so funny in relationships, though, too, because then the next conversation, it'll be her talking me off the ledge for something that I'm the one that's over-exaggerating something. So we balance each other so well.
I try to stress him out even further sometimes because he'll be going on about something that's not real. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, we're like we almost – our family's almost complete. It's going to be like me, you, the dog, and then our twin girl. Oh, God, yeah.
Like, there's a high occurrence of twins in our family. There's like – oh, of course.
Both sides of the family.
Oh, yeah.
Same on mine, yeah. Twins everywhere.
So you're going to have quadruplets.
Oh, God. Yeah, and I'm like, take it easy on that one. Take it easy on that one. So, yeah, but I do think it is sort of realizing that and then also, you know, just making sure that you're always on the same team with each other is my guess. What's your big piece of relationship advice as we're sort of winding this down?
What would you say? Have a good pet name for each other.
Yes, Truby.
Truby.
I mean, I think I said this earlier, but I think it's not enough to just feel love for someone or something. If you have a passion or you feel passionate about something, then you have to show it. Because, you know, why leave that unsaid when you can put it out into the world and make someone feel better?
And I think one thing that I'm still learning because Linda is so romantic and I try, but I feel romantic. I don't think sometimes I'm at her level, but it's actually it becomes a fun thing to always try to challenge yourself, and it doesn't have to be something big or expensive or time consuming, but just to continually do little things and to remember to always date. We're not just because you're married doesn't mean you shouldn't go on dates anymore. And I think
like on Tinder, like just go.
Yeah. Find other people on Tinder. Yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
She's on Twinder. Yeah, it was a
Twinder.
Yeah.
Oh, that would have gotten you points on it. But,
oh my God,
Twinder would have gotten you points.
I think we have so many people we know that don't. They've been married for years and they've never gone out without the kids or something, like just on the two of them. And I think if you remember to still have those sort of fresh. Sort of just date nights worth the two of you connecting, I think that's important to keep the relationship alive.
I mean, whatever you nurture will grow. And if you're nurturing negativity, if you're nurturing like isolation in your relationship, that'll continue to grow. But if you, even in just those idle moments, just nurturing, hey, I just want to tell you I love you, or hey, I just, you know, hey, why don't we go to dinner at the, like just those little deposits really do pay off and bear fruit in the long term because you're investing in the relationship. Like, you're putting into it. I don't know. What's your relationship advice?
I mean, it wouldn't be any different than anything you guys are saying. Like, I'm one of those people where I'm very communicative, I'm very expressive, but I also show my emotions, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing.
It's a great thing.
Well, if I love you, then it's good.
Yeah. Yeah. She's screaming at you and has sharp objects.
But yeah, it's important to be honest and true and to put in the effort. And it is like maintaining a home. It's maintaining your life and maintaining your love and make sure that you build upon it and always put in the time for one another. And not just like hanging out, sitting next to each other, distracted on a device. Mm-hmm. Like you actually have to be focused and present.
This is the perfect time for us all to lean in, hug each other and say, I love you.
Oh, there we go.
Love you. Oh.
I love you.
Love you, Teddy Ruxpin. I love you.
Katie, we're not trying to leave.
That was a bear hug.
But I really, really appreciate you guys being here. You know, you've been such great friends, and we've so enjoyed just being in your lives. And you know, it's like you. I always say this, but as you get older, when you're younger, you sort of just hang out with whoever. And then as you start to get older, you realize like, oh no, I can choose the friend group that I want to be with, people that are fun and people that inspire me and people that are, you know, different but also like-minded and stuff. And so we cherish your friendship and
we do too.
The game night we came to the other night was so funny. I am so embarrassed. I
We had a good laugh.
I
could tell this a lot funnier than he says. I'm gonna tell my version.
Okay. Oh, I know what you're gonna say.
We'll play a he said, he said.
We're all sitting around playing. We had like what, like 12, 15 people there.
Yeah, something like that.
And we're playing our board games. And so Jonathan and Zoe were running late. They came later on. And so we're playing code names and stuff. And as we're all there, we've been there for hours. We were eating. We were sharing laughs and having a good time. And then we're playing code names. Then Jonathan and Zoe show up and come over and say hi to all of us. And then
we all kind of get up and take a break.
Yeah, well, Chris gives Jonathan a hug. And then everyone's kind of talking. And then I walk around the table, and then Chris turns around at me and says, hey, so are you going to stay with us and play Code People or whatever
code
you call
word?
It? Code Word?
Yeah.
You going to come say play Code Word? And I'm like, what? And he's like, Code Word. We've been playing Code Word. You want to come join us for Code Word? And I'm like,
and Drew's like, I've been playing with you
for the last 2 hours.
I had the realization of like, I can't fucking believe I just did the full on noob. But by the way, you guys, to me, you look similar, but you're so distinctive. You were wearing a fucking hat. Like you would,
and I have a beard.
And you have a beard. But Lydia and I, like, we're not late night people, and by that point it was like,
you can see it in your eyes.
Yeah. And so when I hugged Jonathan, I turned around and you literally stood in the place he was in. So my brain spatially had placed Jonathan there. When I turned back around, there was no, like, I just didn't see you. I was still.
I wish I saw the look on. I could see the look on my face. Right. I was so confused. But the honesty in your eyes when you were asking this was quite enjoyable.
I was so embarrassed because I don't. Yeah, I would never confuse. And it's like, I can't believe I just did the thing that a lot of people probably do to them. And we're like really close friends, so it was. Yeah,
It was funny, but I could see you were tired.
I was.
It's all good, and I know Lydia was tired because you were up the last 3 days in a row gardening.
Right. Yeah.
No sleep.
But yeah. Also, I also just want to throw a shout out to Jonathan for the birthday party that he planned and for Zoe was birthday.
It was amazing, unbelievable.
Oh my gosh, given him,
so fun.
He was like, I want to do this 80-themed party. Do you know anyone that has like, you know, an Ecto-1 and then also a DeLorean from Back to the Future? I go, as a matter of fact, I do. So he connected with them, and then but the level of detail, there was like a fucking dance party, and a woman came out and lip synced Madonna and was dressed like Madonna. He had like neon signs of her name and a great band.
Every table had a different board game from back in the 80s.
So
like
cool.
Sorry.
Yes.
The Canadian version of Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Sorry. Like Hungry Hippos. And it was great. Like, that goes to show too. Attention to detail.
Well, you guys are good manifestors. You're very good manifestors. You know how to make things happen. And I also love you guys as a couple because you do balance each other out in that way. And I think a relationship has a good balance. You don't have to be exactly the same type of people.
No.
Lydia and I aren't, but we like the same things. And ultimately, we're always rooting for each other. And I think that's, you know, that's it. So I hope this has been at least, you know, educational or enjoyable or fun or whatever for anyone listening. And I hope people listen to your podcast at home. It was so much fun to do. And I'm so glad you guys are, you know, opening up, and because it does help people. People see you in one way and then they see you as human and they go, oh, he's just, you know, they're like us and we can learn from that. And so I appreciate your willingness to let people in a bit.
I hope that our podcast is one of those little deposits that all of you guys really enjoy. It's a really positive deposit.
It is a positive deposit. Yeah. And that's the other thing I appreciate about you guys. And, you know, when there's so many toxic news cycles out there, you know, like people who go out of their way to put positivity in the world, to make people feel okay, to make them feel connected, to make them feel, you know, loved and appreciated, I just think it's refreshing and it's important. So I really do feel like what you guys are doing is important.
Thank you so much.
So thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
Love you.
I love you.
Love you all.
Love you guys.
Enjoy your burrito. Oh, and then we'll have to like text each other, like you know, as we go down the path to Kid Town.
Oh,
you
know,
just, I mean, it might be weird to be like,
you know, we should do.
It might be weird if you get a text at like 1 a.m.
Depositing
like,
now.
How,
I don't know how you guys did, but I think
that was the best 30 seconds of my life. We'll cut back a little. We'll chat a little, but maybe.
Oh my god, the end.
I love how you were thinking the exact same thing I was like, are you gonna.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.
Girls Fight Back is the world-renowned personal safety and empowerment-based self-defense company that teaches women and people of all gender identities how to live confidently while being their own best protector. As a leading voice on violence prevention and empowerment for over 20 years, Girls Fight Back has trained over 1 million people around the world since 2001.
Their engaging workshops create a safe environment for groups to learn evidence-backed, life-saving skills, emphasizing that self-defense education is about more than just physical resistance. Girls Fight Back, led by CEO Nicole Snell, provides audiences with a range of applicable safety strategies that can be used in any setting so that you can lead a badass life.
To learn more about Girls Fight Back and to bring their award-winning trainings and seminars to your community, visit girlsfightback.com. That's girlsfightback.com.